Welcome to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete Sunshine 96.7 FM. Join us as we celebrate the sparks that ignite, the events that inspire, and the songwriters that create. With your host, Steve Robb.
My guest, Doug Quartler, covers every angle of the music business. He is a solo artist and a songwriter. He's also half of the American roots duo, The Lied To's, with Susan Levine. And he is a prolific music producer with a successful and busy recording studio west of Boston. He covers every angle. Doug Quartler, welcome to Song Creating.
Hi, thanks so much. I appreciate it.
It's great to have you along here. And so you're come to us from west of Boston here, I think, right?
Yeah, I'm northwest, I guess. Not too bad, like 35, 40 minutes, with no traffic. But, of course, with Boston traffic, it could be anywhere from that to 2 hours, you know.
So I want to hear a little bit about your studio there, because you've recorded albums for more than at least two people I've had so far in Song Creating, Chris Levancher and Aaron Ash Sullivan. And I actually think you might be working on Aaron's next album, right?
Yes, absolutely. Yes, absolutely. Yeah. So, I've worked with. So, I started the studio when I was living in New York in Long Island. I grew up in Long Island until I was about 16. And then I moved to Massachusetts for a while. And then I moved back to Long Island for many years. And that's where I had the studio. I opened it up. At first, it started out in a second bedroom of our apartment, and then a basement in a different place. And I recorded a lot of really great artists in that basement in Floral Park, New York.
I'm trying to think of how are you able to record people in a bedroom in New York?
Yeah. Well, it was on Long Island in East Rockaway, and we were the second floor. And it was a second bedroom, and most of the people were like folk people, so it wasn't too loud. Although we did have some people record like full drum kits. We'd set that up in the living room and put the mics out there and whatever. Fortunately, the landlord below was also a family of musicians, so they didn't mind too much.
Oh, great. But I'm also thinking just all the drive-by traffic and the boomboxes, you know, anything else is going
on. Right. Oh, I see what you're saying. Yeah, no, that was all right. That worked.
Well, Rockaway Beach isn't quite like Manhattan and Queens.
Right. Yeah. Exactly. Yes. But then we moved to Floral Park, and I had this basement that was a little, you know, bigger than the bedroom, and I was able to separate it into, you know, the control room and a live room. I was there for a while, and then my family moved back to Massachusetts in 2009 in Newton, Auburndale. And I had a much bigger basement and a really nice finished basement and everything, and started to meet people in this area. And then I went through a divorce and all that fun stuff, and ended up for a while I was using a friend's studio for a while, and then I rented a house here in Chelmsford. And basically, I like to say that the house is in my studio, as opposed to the studio is in my house.
Right.
Yeah, the whole downstairs is the studio and a living space at the same time.
Wow. It reminds me of as an old photographer in New York City, or a photo assistant. I never quite established myself in photography in New York, but guys were always living out of their lofts, and you know, you had the studio, and there's a certain romance to that whole life, you know, where you're just living your job, living your dream, and it hasn't become it's still fun for you.
Yeah, no, it is. It is. I mean, you know, doing something that you love for a job, you know, is both great and not so great, you know, because you're the guy who has to pay yourself, you know. I mean, you're responsible. So it can be tough as well. But I was someone who, like my dad, could never really work in an office. Like, I would get physically sick being in an office setting. So I worked at a few universities doing like financial aid stuff. That was a little better because it wasn't like corporate. But I haven't done that in a while, you know. So now I do the studio full time, and I also do shows for senior citizens at assisted living facilities around the area.
Oh yeah, those are great. I got a chance to play one with my mother's assisted living, and I got to learn all the old Burt Bacharach, and it was great. I love it.
That's great. Yeah, they love it. They love it. The residents there, they really love it. So
and you kind of all of a sudden you realize, oh, this was actually really good music they wrote back then, didn't?
Oh yeah, absolutely.
A lot of great stuff.
You can learn so much from those songs. Yeah. You know? Great stuff.
So you've got a number of albums of your own that are out over the years. With the Line Twos, the Foundry, I think, is an old band that you had.
Yeah.
Did you produce these yourself, or was it helpful to have another record producer kind of look at this from a different perspective? How did this all work out along with your own producing credentials?
Well, the first like original real band I was in was a band called Wheel. It was my band as well. And we recorded a couple CD and a half, I guess, or so. And we went to a studio in Long Island. I can't remember the name now, but that was a great experience. That was cool. And then we also went to another studio. Was at the time, it was called Late Night Studios in Plainview, and I met the person there who ran it. His name was Kevin. And funny enough, his name is Kevin Kelly, which is the same name as a guy who runs a studio here in this area.
In Boston, in the Boston area, there's a lot of Kevin Kellys.
Yeah, I'm sure. Yeah. Yes. So we went to that one, and, you know, I loved being in the studio. I just really loved it. This was many, many, many years ago. And then with Foundry, with our first record, I actually started to spend a lot of time at his studio, and I started to work there part-time assisting him, and then eventually taking over some sessions. And then I kind of started to buy my own stuff, and little by little, I ended up doing the first Foundry record kind of like a third at his studio, and then the rest at my you know, bedroom at the time. And then I started to record other people. You know, I just started to really enjoy it and record other people. And that was in that bedroom, you know. And that's kind of how I fell into it. So all of these records, except for my first Wheel record, all of these records I've recorded and produced myself. So that's cool. Now, all that being said, I wouldn't mind sometimes soon, even because I've been doing this for so long, my own stuff. I wouldn't mind to get a producer and just kind of give that up, you know, someone I have to trust, you know, who has the same sort of style or whatever thought process as me. But I wouldn't mind to try that and just kind of give up just for that one record, you know. Give that up and just concentrate on playing, you know. Yeah. That would be pretty cool too.
Well, when you were producing your own bands, did you ever have a need, or did you enlist somebody to really come in and listen and go and really give you like that doctor's second opinion, you know?
Yeah, we
is that
no one in particular, but different people, you know, different friends or whatever. And I have a good friend who still lives there, who is also very into audio recording and stuff like that. And he was in the band Foundry. So between me and him, you know, we did all right. You know, it takes a while to really trust your ears, you know, as an engineer and a producer, and you know, with various different rooms, you can hear things differently. And then there's always the car test where you take your stuff and play it in the car. Mm-hmm. But it takes a while to really learn what things sound like and trust yourself, so you don't wind up with something that sounds completely different than what you were thinking. Over time, you know, I've learned to trust myself more. But I certainly have a few key people who I play stuff for, you know, before I send it out. Yeah. And Susan is great too. She's got a great ear. So
this is Susan, you know, being your live two's yeah, a partner. Now Aaron tells me that you play a lot of instruments and you really right, have a lot on. So I mean, you cover everything from drums to ukulele, I think, right?
Yeah. I only consider myself really a guitarist and a singer and a songwriter. The other instruments I can play, but I don't consider myself, you know, like a drummer or a bass player, but I can play them and I can make them sound good on recording. I try to really, if I'm producing something and we're not bringing in other people, which sometimes we do, and I try and really make it sound like a band. You know, I really work hard at that, so it doesn't just sound like piece by piece kind of thing. And I do play, you know, drums and bass. I can play a little bit of keyboard, ukulele, a little bit of mandolin. You know, that's something I have my studio, which is Hollow Body Studios. And then I also started this other website, which I don't really use that much, but it's called Add the Band. And it was more for like actually international or around the world, where I really kind of focused in on send me your song, your guitar and your vocal, and I will add the band, you know, essentially. Mm-hmm. But that's kind of what I do, you know, at Hollow Body. So like Erin will come in, she'll play the song first for me and we'll talk about it. Then we'll record the song with her playing guitar and vocal. And this is how I work with most people. And then we'll talk about arrangements and then she'll go. And then I work, you know, kind of on my own on it. And then I'll send it to the artist, her or whatever. And if there's some things they want me to change or whatever, then I do that. And that's kind of how we work. That's a lot of what I do. And then, you know, I also have artists and bands coming in here as well.
Yeah, I know I'm recording my own albums too in my own studio. And nice. I don't think I'm at quite the level that you are, even close, but I play a number of instruments. And I find when I'm in the midst of a song, it consumes me. And in doing so, as you keep playing it to yourself, you go, you know what? I think it needs a break right here, you know? And I'm wondering just how much a song actually consumes you and, you know, from in a 24/7 way, you know, does it get stuck in your head as you're trying to go to sleep at night? I mean, how do you actually get out of that? Cause it really does.
Yeah.
Really can absorb.
Definitely. I mean, it definitely, I can get consumed, you know, obviously if it's my song, I can get consumed, but
yeah,
but for artists, songs and clients, you know, there's one artist and I'm doing his album, and there's this one song that just the other day, I mean, I was just like tunnel vision, just getting what I needed to get done on it. It took hours, you know, but I also work very spontaneously with my production in general, which I think adds to the sort of live feel in a way. You know, I work very fast in terms of ideas and just putting things down and then getting hit with other ideas as I'm kind of layering. You know, I'll have a general idea, but sometimes I'll go in even without any ideas, and I'll just say, all right, I'm going to try and add this guitar part. And then if that doesn't work, then I add something else. And then that might take me somewhere else. And then before you know it, I kind of have this whole thing, you know, built up. So I kind of work that way. And I think that that has some advantages in some ways.
Yeah. And your songwriting ability has to really play a role in this as well. Just hearing things, adding to it. I suppose you probably have done that, adding to somebody's, and they either accept it or say, nope, that's not going to work.
Yeah. I mean, most of the time, fortunately, and because we talk about it beforehand, you know, it's pretty on, you know, target. But yeah, sometimes absolutely you can be off. Yeah, in terms of songwriting, so my production definitely is inspired by my songwriting as in the way that the production is only for the benefit of the song. So I like to try to not put too much or too little, you know, whatever the song is kind of speaking to. Sometimes it just needs one guitar extra, you know, sometimes a little, just a pad of a keyboard behind a guitar, but sometimes it needs a lot. You know, this song that I was working on for this artist, I told you that it was one of the kind of a big production. So that's why it was taking me a long time, but it's really the songwriting influences me in my production by, producing and adding parts that benefit the song. So I'm not doing anything like just noodling on guitar or whatever, you know. It all has kind of a purpose, and I don't, you know, whatever the song kind of speaks to me, and also with the artist's, you know, recommendations and what we talk about.
Yeah. So what inspired you way back at the beginning as a little boy in Long Island? What got you going on all this?
You know, I mean, I always loved music. You know, when I was a early teen, I would listen to, like, you know, AM radio. We had WABC there or whatever. And there was this guy, Chuck Leonard, who was a DJ. And it was all like this 70s kind of soft rock in some way, but kind of upbeat too. Like, I remember, like, Philadelphia Freedom, that kind of stuff. And what is that? Things You Do for Love, you know, yeah. Things You Do, those kinds of songs. And I loved those. And my father and mother were into music too. And that helped. And then at some point, you know, maybe 13, 14, I started to play my tennis racket in my room, you know, two songs, and I'd be jumping around, and I would, my brother, who's two and a half years older than me, would be into bands, and I started to get into The Who, and I started to love Pete Townsend.
It's a great tennis racket song.
Yeah, right. So I would just be jumping around, playing my Pete Townsend and stuff, and then I got into, then, and my parents, my father was, my parents were into folk music, classic, you know, like Pete Seeger and Woody Guthrie, Arlo Guthrie, Lead Belly, Emmylou Harris, you know, those people. And so I watched them too. And we went to concerts of some of those people. And so then that came back to me a little later, because what happened when I was about 14 or 15 and being from Long Island, I started to get into the Stray Cats, who are from Long Island, and rockabilly. Yeah. And I just loved it. And when we moved to Massachusetts in the middle of high school, my parents got me a Gretsch guitar, a 67 Gretsch guitar, and a Fender Bassman, which I don't have either of them at that point now. But and then I joined the high school band, which was kind of funny because I was playing these rockabilly leads, and the high school band, it was original music, but it was more like REM and that kind of stuff. And I was doing all these rockabilly leads. So that was kind of funny.
When you say high school band, you don't mean the high school band. You mean a
right
kids
one of the rock bands or whatever in the high school. You know,
not the organized, not like the jazz band.
Correct. Although yeah, I was in the jazz band as well. But this, I was in like the. I mean, like the band bands, you know, the kid bands or whatever. Yeah.
But playing in a jazz band is, I did that for a time. You learn a lot when you're having exposed to that.
I felt lost every day in there. Mm-hmm. You know, it was, yeah, so it was good. It was good to learn all that. Yeah, absolutely. I forgot most of it, but, you know. So but what
the,
else?
Well, the kid you were playing in a kids band or whatever you.
Oh yeah, so I got into the Stray Cats, and that was kind of my gateway into country music. So I got into what you call Americana music or alt country or whatever with I think the combination of rockabilly, which has some country stuff in there, and folk, and that combined. And then I started to get into Springsteen and Dylan and Jackson Browne and Tom Petty. And that really kind of opened up my songwriting. And then I got a little 4-track, you know, tape recorder and recorded a whole like 20 songs in my parents' basement and stuff. And then that really influenced my songwriting. Those people, you know.
We're still talking high school years here?
High school, college as well. 85, 86. U2, Springsteen, Dylan, Jackson Browne. Those guys just, you know, that's the folk side. But then I was also, my parents, you know, had listened to a lot of, also besides folk, a lot of Johnny Cash. Waylon Jennings, you know, stuff like that. So that was country as well. So yeah, that was, you know, those are like the big ones, you know.
But I want to make sure, were you writing music at this time in that style, or were you playing covers of these
music? I started to write really not until I was maybe 20 or something like that. So I was just playing stuff, you know, covers. I did write one song, my first song, I think when I was 16 or 17 or something, but I didn't start writing a lot until maybe 20, 21, something like that.
I think you should consider yourself lucky for missing that whole middle school era where the songs are horrible.
Yeah, that's right. Yeah. Yes.
They really are.
Yeah.
Oh, that's cool. So, where were your college years?
I went to I graduated from Amherst High School, and then I went to 2 or 2.5 years at UMass Amherst, and then my parents had moved back to New York, and my father was working at NYU, and that meant I could go for free. So I transferred to NYU, even though I kind of didn't want to. I kind of liked Amherst. But I transferred to NYU and graduated from there with an art degree in studio art.
Like it's sculpture. A very different cultural experience between those two colleges.
Yeah, absolutely. But I I was used to New York from growing up there. That's so true. It wasn't a culture shock.
And you were coming into New York at the time of that big country craze, I think, if I got my era's right, or maybe a little post-country?
I think you're right, or a little...
Remember the Lone Star on Fifth Avenue was really popular in the early 80s.
Yeah, the Rodeo Bar was also there. I went to UMass from 85 to 87, or 87 and a half, and then NYU until 2000 or so. I'm sorry, until
1990.
Yeah.
So the village was still the village though. Yeah.
Yeah. I did love the village, you know. I did love, you know, there's just people playing music everywhere, you know, and lot of cool stuff there at that time. I haven't been back there in a while, actually, but
yeah.
We did. Susan and I got to go to New York to play at it's called On Your Radar, and it's run by a DJ from WFUV, it's at this club in New York, and we got to play there, and we walked around a little bit. Susan lived in New York for a while as well, so that was cool because there are aspects of it that I miss as well.
Were you gigging at all at that time when you were down there, or even when you were in Amherst? Did you were you playing in any bands at the time?
Yeah, well, in Amherst, I was in that high school band in high school, and then in college at UMass, I started to just kind of play on my own. And then when I transferred to NYU, I got into a band called Rubens Paradox, where I was the lead guitar player. And it was called Rubens Paradox because most of the band lived in Reuben Hall in the city. So I did that. And then I formed my first band, which is actually a cover band before Wheel. It was called the Blue Rogues, and we did like cover songs, anything from 50s to 90s, you know, at the time. And then Wheel, then Foundry, then me alone again with my own band, Doug Kortler Band, and then moved here and met Susan, and then now with the Lightudes. So, yeah.
Yeah. And so you're in the Lightudes is your duo with Susan. Mm-hmm. You've been together for how long now?
We've been a band or duo for about 9 years. We met about 10 and a half years ago, and we've okay. been.
So before you met Susan, were you doing some solo gigs in and around the? I'm not sure I get all the timing, everything, but you had moved up back up to Boston prior to meeting Susan, I think.
Yes. So 2009, I moved to Boston, and then
were you doing some gigging at the time then?
I'm sorry. I don't know if I was doing like full gigs, but I was going to a lot of open mics and stuff around the area. So that was good because I started to get to know people. And I met Susan at the open mic that was run by Mark Stepakoff. Although I may have met her. I always get the order mixed up because I think that was after, though. I met her, and then we had talked, and then I was still married, and she had just gone through a divorce or so. And I didn't see her for maybe a year. And then we both played this music festival together, and we, went to this radio station in Worcester, WICN, a folk revival program run by Nick Noble. And, we met there, and I approached her, and I looked at her guitar. She has a beautiful old Gibson guitar, and we always joke that she jokes that I was more interested in the guitar than her. But then at some point she needed a producer, and I had gone through my divorce or was going through it, and I was living in an apartment at that time, and we talked, and I in the apartment, and then also in my friend's studio, I produced a song for her, and she really liked what I did. And then we started to just hang out more, and we started playing together. And then we officially called it the Lightudes at some point.
The Lightudes. I'm curious about where the name came from.
Yeah. So it came from kind of two things. Number one, just in terms of the actual name, we were covering When Will I Be Loved by the Everly Brothers. And there's a line in there, I've been lied to. I've been made blue. I've been lied to. And I think Susan said, oh, that would be an interesting name or something. And then we talked about it. And then kind of fitting with our recent history at the time. You know, she had gone through a bad divorce and I had gone through a hellish divorce, and kind of that kind of influenced the name, and it kind of fit, you know. I think it's a good name. I mean, names are so hard to come by, you know, good names. That's how we became the Lied To's.
The impression you're giving people is that you are more than a musical couple.
Oh yeah. Yeah, we are.
Oh, you are. Okay.
Yeah.
I wasn't quite sure.
Yeah.
I was thinking of something about, well, you know, he liked my guitar before me, and it's like, I think there's something more than music going on here. All right.
Yeah. In fact, we just kind of celebrated our 10th year together. So,
wow.
Yeah.
Nice. All right. Yeah. Well, we're looking forward to having Susan on in another time.
Yeah.
Actually, it'll coordinate. Couldn't quite coordinate your schedules for one, but this will work great.
You're listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete, Sunshine 96.7 FM.
Well, it's true what they say, you never know day to day what's gonna drop on the other side. It bleeds more than the heart sometimes. Could you hear me through the walls if I took that big fall? 'Cause I've been known to stumble. And falling up the stairs, I ain't that humble. Well, it's not who you love, it's who loves you. It's who loves you. Like the moon in a sky of blue, I'm coming for you. Live like a king before tomorrow. Sometimes you gotta beg before you can borrow. If you're wondering from the start, can you break a broken heart? It's just like running downhill. Your brain says stop, but you never will. It's not who you love, it's who loves you. It's not who you love, it's who loves. And I'll never live without it. Well, you think you've come a long way, you're feeling okay. Got all these plans of what you're gonna do. Well, baby, that's the worst kind of news. It's just one step at a time. Don't count your last dime. Push the pedal through the floor. You're the only one here that's keeping score. It's not who you love, it's who loves you. Who loves you? It's not who you love, it's who loves you.
So, Doug, do you find yourself mostly compelled to write songs with tension and heartache over the alternative?
Almost every song, you know, I write is about either the struggles of life or relationships. So there's always that in there. Specifically, how this song came about was not necessarily. It didn't necessarily start from a relationship type of a thing, although that's certainly in there. So when I wrote maybe 2 or 3 years ago, I can't even remember, but it's on our latest, it's on our new record, which is a year old now. What happened was two people who I knew not well, but I knew, passed away kind of within a month of each other. So one was a person here in Massachusetts, and he was a musician as well. And then one was a singer in Long Island who I knew, but I didn't know them very well. But they were really loved in the community, in their communities, respectfully, you know, their communities. And I was kind of blown away by how many people told stories about these two people separate, you know, they're separate places. Just incredible. So more than I'd seen for anyone else, you know, you see a lot on Facebook and all that stuff. So I don't know, it just, the line came to me of it's not, you know, who you love, it's who loves you. And then it's sort of, so that's kind of how it started. And then it kind of more became a song of kind of like living for the moment in some ways. So a lot of the verses are about living in the moment. Do it now, because you don't know what's going to happen in the future. So, you know, if you looked at all the lyrics, you could see that first line, you know, you never know what's going to drop on the other side. So anything can happen. You know, live like a king before tomorrow. Can you break a broken heart? Yes. And then there's got all these plans that you're going to do. Well, baby, that's the worst kind of new, which was the actual title of the record. And so that kind of means like, well, you're planning out all your stuff and what you're going to do. But anything can happen, you know, so just do it, you know, that kind of stuff. That's kind of where it came from, and then the kind of what it became, you know.
The sound of this song, I mean, I think if someone were to read the lyrics, I'm not sure what kind of a tempo and a feel they would come to, you know, or think about with this song. And I'm not sure which came first for you, and or if it all happens kind of morphs all together at the same time. But there's definitely a kind of an upbeat, happy feel to this.
Yeah.
And is that reflective of how you want to remember them, or what is there a thought to that?
Well, if I were to say there was a thought to it, you could say that kind of like do what you can now, live in the moment, you know, and that there's a positive aspect of that, right? So that could be really the only thing that kind of relates to the tempo, I think. But that being said, you know, I don't do this a lot, but sometimes there's something to be said for music that is a little different than the subject, you know, like this definitely could be a slow kind of sad song, you know, and maybe I'll play it that way one day, you know, but it just came out this way and it's good. That's all, you know, there's something to it, you know, something.
That's your song and you're sticking to it.
Yeah.
It is.
There's something to it. You know, there's something cool about playing something upbeat but giving a different kind of message. Because in some ways, it it can carry the message, you know, maybe better than something more, you know, depressing or something, you know, who knows?
Like on the chorus, it's not who you love, it's who loves you. It's not who you love, and you hold that.
Yeah,
I think it's the third. Yeah,
and the third one. Yeah,
I'm wondering is in the course of creating this whole song. I don't know if you can think back to that whole progress, but was this like one of those things that after you recorded it, you went, you know, I know it needs something else here. And let's just hold that note for a little longer. I mean, was it that kind of thing, or did that kind of happen like right at the start?
I think that idea came to me as I was recording, probably. Sometimes that happens if you're lucky and you're like, oh yeah, that is actually kind of cool. And what actually happens is each chorus gets longer. So the first chorus is pretty much right away. The second chorus is a little longer, and the third chorus is long. You know that
you're
that,
talking about the whole of the word love.
Just the whole of the note. Yeah. And when we do it live, we hold it out for much longer than that. We go until we're out of breath, basically. Usually people like that. Yeah, it's cool.
That's great. You can't do like the sax players can do the circuit breathing. You know, they can hold that note.
Yeah.
You know, can't do that with vocals, though. Well, wouldn't that be cool if we could?
There's one person I know who can do that. I think it's Vance Gilbert.
Really?
I think so. Somehow. I don't know. I don't know if he could actually sing words and stuff, but he can hold a note and kind of just hold it forever and do that cyclical breathing or whatever.
Oh, that's funny. I wonder if he's actually breathing in as a... I don't know.
Yeah, it beats me. I don't know. Yeah.
I've seen him. I had a songwriting course with him, and I can't recall. There was something. I mean, he's a multi-talented guy. Talent I don't quite remember, but
I'm pretty sure I'm right about that.
Yeah. The line, the worst kind of new. I mean, that's a great line, and you must have like gone, oh, this is. I know I can work this in here because that really is. I think you've come a long way. You're feeling okay. Got all these plans of what you're going to do. Well, baby, that's the worst kind of new. And, oh, man, it's almost like, I guess, as you said before, it's something you got to get to.
Yeah. So, you know, got all these plans, what you're going to do, that's not necessarily a bad thing, but in the context of the song, where the song is saying, you know, anything can happen to you, so don't plan too far ahead, but not in a bad way, but just kind of do it now, you know. And you know, really, I'm singing to myself, really. You know, I mean, these songs, you know, there's a lot of stuff about kind of my life in here and singing, kind of, which is pretty common, you know, you're kind of singing to yourself in some ways. But then anyone can listen to it and hopefully connect with it. So yeah, the worst kind of new, that was definitely cool when I came up with that. I don't remember exactly that line coming up, but that's when I did that. But I liked it, you know, so much that I've kind of recommended it for the album title. And so we talked about different titles and came up with that. So, and, you know, I think it's just so appropriate with what happened. It starts to become more universal, which the worst kind of new. Well, what is the worst kind of new? Well, COVID is new or was new. So that's the worst kind of new. Political stuff was going on, you know, crazy stuff was going on there. So there's a lot of new things that are happening that aren't necessarily good new. Could be the worst kind of new, you know.
I'm guessing both of these friends of yours who passed away both died before their time.
Yes.
Both young. Yeah. Yeah.
Absolutely. Yeah.
That's tough. It's the tributes that you hear, and I think you alluded to it, that the memorial services, you start hearing all about them in the past tense and no longer in the present tense. And sometimes a lot of that isn't said in the present tense. It all comes out later on.
Yeah. That's true. Yes.
Yeah. I often wonder, is it in the context of the funeral, the memorial service, if you die early, at least your friends can make it to your funeral. If you make it to 95, there's nobody left to come.
Right. That's right.
There's nobody there to talk about you, all the great things you did.
Right. That is true.
I'm not sure which one's better, but I think I'll try to last as long as I can.
I don't know either.
Yeah. This reminds me, my dad played tennis up until probably late 80s.
Wow.
Even before that, he was always frustrated himself for not moving fast enough. And you could hear him on the tennis court going, "Move the feet, move the feet." And my daughters make fun of it. And I don't have a tattoo yet, but I think I'm going to get a tattoo that says "Move the feet," because, you know, it's like your line here. It goes beyond the original context.
Yeah.
You know, move the feet is just stay active, you know, keep coming up with something new.
Well, that is actually very similar to what I said to myself, you know, when I was going through my divorce. You know, it was not move the feet, but keep moving. That's all I said, because I didn't want to. I just wanted to stay in bed and not do anything, you know. And so just I kept saying to myself, keep moving. And, you know, it's universal, like, you know, just got to keep moving, you know.
Yeah.
That's good. Move the feet. I like that too.
It's a constant struggle. I find that drama, you know, on TV, drama makes, you know, great TV, right? And drama makes good songs too. Whether it's, you know, love problems, whatever it might be. If you've got some, you can't just all be happy. You know, that's just a silly sitcom,
right?
But sometimes it's nice to have just a good positive song. At times, but I wonder what your where you find yourself gravitating.
You know, interestingly enough, you know, the music of this song, like we talked about, you know, it's kind of upbeat and positive, so
yeah,
that's cool. So you can kind of sing about something that's not so great, but you're still positive. But in general, my stuff is more the first, which is more, you know, about kind of tough things, you know, that kind of stuff. I have a few songs that are positive. You know, I have a couple of, you know, songs about love or whatever, you know, I write some old timey.
Just some good old sappy love songs.
Stuff like that. But there's always something in there. There's always something lurking, even in the happy songs.
Well, you got to sometimes have some tension somewhere.
Yeah.
A songwriting teacher of mine said, changed up my lyrics, said, "You need some tension in here, Steve." No, I just kind of like this happy thought. No, I got some tension.
Yeah.
So what's coming up for you? You guys are working on another album?
Well, we may be working on another album. The plan kind of was to put out the last album and then do actually two solo records. One, because we both started out as, you know, our own, you know, solo.
Yeah.
And of course there'll be overlap on each record. So, you know, there'll be some lied to ish kind of stuff, but it'll really be more geared, if we do that, which hopefully we will, more geared to that, put those out. And then after that, I'm kind of feeling more, you know, I'm an old school guy, you know, who believes in albums, you know, but it's such a different world now, you know. I'm kind of a little more accepting of maybe kind of putting out singles, you know, and kind mm-hmm. of doing that, you know, and just seeing if the immediacy of that can do something. You know, but I don't know yet, you know.
Yeah.
I don't
know. Yeah.
Different
do you
world.
And Susan do you and Susan co-write a lot?
No, not at all. So we're both
That's interesting.
We're both kind of very protective, I guess, of our of the way we write. So we did try once or twice, and we came up with a song that's pretty good, but we haven't finished it. And I don't know if we ever will, but hopefully.
Is it because you just can't agree? You can't come to terms together, or what? No,
it's that. Like, I mean, you could. What we do is we will, after we finish a song on our own, we'll send it to the other person, and they'll give, you know, some feedback. You know, sometimes it's good, sometimes it's attention or whatever. But in terms of, I think, I don't know. With me, I think I'm just very, you know, maybe I'm just afraid. Who knows? You know, because when you're creating, things aren't, you know, put together yet or something. So you're very vulnerable, you know, at what you're writing down, and it's just kind of coming out, you know. And so, I don't know, I feel kind of protective over that. That being said, I wouldn't mind writing, certainly with Susan and with other people.
Yeah.
To give it a try.
Yeah. Well, obviously there's got to be a certain amount of trust, which you two share already.
Absolutely.
But it is a different thing. There's trust, but there's also just a real creative similarity that you need to have and you need to rely on. And I'm with you. I have not co-written a song with anybody. And I don't know how I've been asked to, and it just hasn't worked out. Not that I've been actually reluctant to, but you know, it's I don't know. I'm afraid I'm either going to be the jerk who takes charge and bullies his way through, which I sometimes have been known to do, or in other things, or not have enough of an influence in the song and then be frustrated about it. You know, right. And I don't know, there's a balance that you have to figure out, and I don't know how to do that yet.
Yeah, no, I agree. You know, I don't know. I kind of just, I feel kind of on the spot, you know, if I'm with someone, and that kind of, if I'm trying to write with someone, not so much Susan, but with other people, and then I can't access wherever the songs are coming from as easily when someone is there, because I feel pressure, you know, to get something out, you know. So I don't, when I produce records, I do it alone. I don't have the artist with me. I mean, we talk about it so they know what's coming, and then I send it to them, and then we can do some changes and stuff. But I can't really work when someone's here, because it just kind of freezes me up in a way. You know, I'm not as free to just do things.
Yeah. Well, you're trusting your own instincts.
Yeah. I mean, I'll still send it to them and we'll change stuff, or I'll send it to someone else. But yeah, while I'm creating, it just has to be like a just very spontaneous. And if someone's here, that's not going to flow, you know, for me.
Yeah. Yeah. Well, it's like someone looking over your shoulder and you just.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Yeah.
Got to have that autonomy. Well, yeah. It's true, though. All right. Well, Doug, this has been great. I honestly, there's hardly any editing to do here on this interview. This has just been totally, fully informative. It's great.
Thank you.
Doug Quartley can be found at DougMusic.com. When did you get that domain?
Right. Yeah, absolutely. I got that long time ago. So,
but I can't imagine DougQuartler.com was already taken.
No, Doug Quartler wasn't. I think I have that as well, and I think it just goes to Doug Music.
Yeah, yeah. Might as well hang on to that one, too.
Absolutely, yes. And then also lietomusic.com for the
live. Yes, that's right.
Well, yep. Yeah.
Yeah, and the lied, so I know the, it's L-I-E-D-T-O-S.
Apostrophe, well, but in a web thing, it's just lied to music, LIEDTO music. We leave out the S.
Right. Yeah.
Yeah.
It does get a little, make sure we get that. So the liedtomusic.com, DougMusic.com. Yep. And,
And also hollowbodystudios.com. That's my studio.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right. Super. You got a lot of things going on there.
Yeah.
It's great. How many hours a week are you putting in on all this stuff?
I got a ton of work now, which is great, but I'm working at all night.
Well, great. I'm glad you were able to take some time out for us.
Thank you. We really appreciate it. And I'm looking forward to the show that we're doing. Yep. Yeah.
We've got a concert coming up here in my area. I'm facilitating, and Doug and Susan are, as the Lied Twos, are going to be part of our American Roots music series. It's going to be excellent. Really looking forward to that.
Thanks for having me. And thanks for doing this, too. This is a great thing.
Oh, my pleasure, Doug. It's a lot of fun. I get to meet a lot of great people. Yeah. I love it. And learn something new every time.
Yeah.
All right, Doug. Thanks very much. Take care.
All right. Have a great one. Take care.
Okay.
Thanks for listening to Song Creating on Radio St. Pete. If you like what you hear, you can find Song Creating on your favorite podcast app or at songcreating.com. To check out my own music, go to steverobb.com. And until next time, keep a song in your head and music in your heart. Thanks for listening.